Welcome to the Minor League Radio Podcast, your source for what to think. From politics to pro wrestling, pop culture to progressive metal, confusing rhetoric, chronic masturbation, religion, rashes in inconvenient places, and of course the gold standard in pornography criticism. Gather around now your digital player of choice and enjoy the musings of your perpetually confused host. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Gardner.
I bid you greetings, noble citizens. It is I, Jim Gardner, at the helm of the Minor League Radio juggernaut once again. Well, biggest story of the day, I sat on my own nuts. Apparently, as I age, my scrotum is getting so droopy that if I'm not careful, I will turn myself into a eunuch. Luckily, I was able to do one of those quick back arches out of my chair before any lasting damage was done, but damn, sitting on your own nuts got me to thinking that is like a droopy scrotum the equivalent of droopy boobs? You know how like a 21-year-old woman has the nice perky boobs and the nipples point straight up to the sky like freshly bloomed flowers reaching for the first rays of sun on a bright spring morn? But by the time said woman is 45, those nipples are pointing straight down and you could use them to divine water in arid climates. You know, when I was in my 20s and 30s, I never sat on my nuts. My scrotum was just nice, high and tight. Oh, God, now it's just a wreck down there. I should put my groin on display in a circus sideshow, start making some real money.
The Minor League Radio Podcast. A half hour you'll never get back.
Well, things keep happening in the world, and the Minor League Radio Podcast is here to further obfuscate in these murky times, so let's get cracking. Going to be talking a lot of music this edition of the podcast, which pleases me. I love talking about music. Biggest story, Whitney Houston. She's dead, but she's still in the news. Check this out. National Enquirer publisher calls Whitney Houston's casket photo, quote, beautiful. This is from Fox News. In the face of criticism over what some have described as a, quote, shameful decision to put Whitney Houston's corpse on the cover of their magazine this week, the publisher of the National Enquirer told FoxNews.com that she thought the cover was a work of art. Quote, I thought it was beautiful, publisher Mary Beth Wright told FoxNews.com. I looked at it, and she's right, it is beautiful, man. I'd crawl into that casket right now. Just wait, no, I would not. I am not going to make necrophilia a big part of my humor. That's not who I am. And I am sorry. Was hot, though. Fellow members of the media attacked the publication's decision as tasteless and morbid. I agree. Awful, awful stuff. The Washington Post declared that a line had been crossed. The website Jezebel called it morbid, and the site The Daily Caller added, running an image of Whitney Houston's lifeless body on the cover is pretty par for the course for the National Enquirer, but it's still a bit much. Geez, you think? The photo shows the late singer dead in a gold casket with the headline, Whitney. The last photo. The image is believed to have been taken inside the Wigham Funeral Home in Newark, New Jersey. Accompanying headlines lure readers in with the promise to bring them inside Whitney's private funeral, offering details that she was buried in $500,000 worth of jewelry with gold slippers on her feet. Houston, 48, of course, was found submerged in the bathtub in her Beverly Hills hotel room earlier this month. The photograph does not bear a credit, and the Enquirer is not releasing any details about how they obtained it, freedom of the press and all that. No one from Houston's family has called the photograph out as fraudulent. Magazine photo editors estimated that a coffin photograph like the one published by the Enquirer could sell in the mid-six-figure range or even higher. This isn't the first time the Enquirer has published photographs of dead or dying celebrities. In 1977, the mag published a photograph of the singer Elvis Presley in his coffin, and they published a photo of John Lennon following his death in 1980. Those nasty people at the Enquirer. I tell you what, if you want the National Enquirer and others of their ilk to quit engaging in this kind of tasteless journalism, then quit buying the fucking rags, huh? How about that, Oh, poor Whitney. She, you know, I went back and listened to some of her tunes, and she really, really was a talent. Just an amazing, amazing, beautiful voice. And a beautiful person. It always amused me, though, that she was marketed as like this all-American girl, you know, just the girl next door. Then along comes Bobby Brown, and they get hitched. You know, Bobby Brown had like 35 kids by 35 different women by the time he was 20. I'm assuming he still does. I don't think any of his children have died. But everyone was like, huh? What's that all about? And then Bobby Brown's like, man, she's a hood rat just like me. And I'm like, really? But then you hear this and you think, well, yeah, maybe.
First of all, let's get one thing straight. Crack is cheap. I make too much money to ever smoke crack. Let's get that straight, okay? We don't do crack. We don't do that. Crack is whack.
It sure is, Whitney. It sure is. Now, my comments might sound a little racial here, but they're not. It's not about race. It's all about socioeconomic status. What this is a girl who grew up poor, and now she's really, really rich, and she's using that to kind of defend her behavior. She's all about, man, that crack, that's for the poor folks. That ain't for me. I'm rich. I don't smoke crack. You see that fine china gravy boat over there? Yeah, bring that here. Bring that to me. That's full of blow. But now, it wasn't the crack or the blow that got her. It was the pharmaceuticals. I don't know if the toxicology reports have officially been back or returned yet, but I've heard rumors that it was like Xanax and Percocet and booze that did her in. And it got me thinking that, you know, this pharmaceutical thing is really a problem. It's kind of becoming an epidemic. And one of my favorite people, Dr. Drew Pinsky, was on Real Time with Bill Maher, a show that I watch pretty religiously. And they had a pretty good conversation about prescription drugs and Whitney Houston's death and whatnot. Let's listen in, shall we?
You know, I have to remind people that we as physicians, we only have really three things in our armamentarium. We have a scalpel, we have medication, and we have our relationship. And so many doctors get very hot on using medicine as, and by the way, the insurance company, the system is telling us to go faster and quicker and not have a relationship, just use medicine or the scalpel. And that is really putting some rocket fuel behind this problem. Whoa.
Okay, first off, armamentarium? Holy cow. You know, even though I say fucking shit a lot, I actually kind of pride myself on my ability to use the English language and use my vocabulary to convey my ideas accurately. So it's always fun to encounter a new word. I've never heard of armamentarium. Wow, that's cool. In fact, I have now set my life's pinnacle, my high bar, at a new level. When I can use the word armamentarium correctly in a sentence and it just kind of flows naturally and it doesn't sound like I'm being pretentious, then I know my life will have reached its peak and I can die. Armamentarium. Check out the big brain on Dr. Drew. Let's continue.
And the fact is, the problem now is, and this is what's getting me crazy, is that we have a problem with prescription drugs that is massive. It started with Heath Ledger, and when that poor guy died, I've said it on program.
Well, it started with Elvis.
It started, I'll grant you that, but it really, what I was fighting in my clinical life, I saw really coming on as a tsunami, and when I saw Heath go, I thought, this is the beginning of a tsunami where we're going to see public figures going one after the other, and I feel impotent and sad that I couldn't have done more, and now we're losing, you know, Michael Jackson and Amy Winehouse, and this is ridiculous, and it's not going to stop here.
I'm sorry you're impotent.
And it's a different problem.
And you
mentioned Bob.
You transposed there. You. I think it was a little Freudian slip, Doc.
Perhaps.
You meant to say Heath, and you said Keith. You were thinking of Keith Richards, who's still alive.
Absolutely.
Who does not do pharmaceuticals. He does street drugs.
And Bill, this is a point that.
And
I
that's
would,
a message for the kids. Do the street drugs, right?
No, it's not a message for the kids, but it's. Wow. These guys like that message, evidently, but it's a point well taken, which is that think of all the rock stars from the 60s and 70s and 80s, absent IV heroin. If you were not an IV heroin user, which people die of that for
Keith
sure.
Keith was.
For the most part, if you were a polydrug user and you did not go to pharmaceuticals, you are still with us today.
Right.
As soon as they went to pharmaceuticals, they're dead. It's very subtle, it's very pernicious, and the thinking is so disturbed because, hey, I'm just doing what my doctor told me.
Love me some Dr. Drew, and here's why. When most people talk, not most, but when a lot of people talk, my bullshit meter goes off the charts. But when Dr. Drew talks, my bullshit meter does not even tingle. Because I really think this guy, in spite of the fact that he has 50,000 flip the channel, every third cable channel has a Dr. Drew show on it. I guess that's just the way it is. Guy's making money, man. But in spite of all that, he really presents accurate information, and when he's putting his spin on things, he lets you know, And it's a good thing. He's someone I really respect in the entertainment industry. Bill Maher, I like him too. He makes me think. I don't agree with him 90% of the time, and he really pisses me off. But he's kind of a guy, it's like, if I can argue with this guy, I know I've accomplished something. So, real time, good show. Love me some Dr. Drew. You know, and the conversation gets me thinking about drugs and what we need to do about it. Now, I've always been in favor of legalizing pot because I just, you know, a pothead, what's he going to do? He might break into your house and eat your Doritos. Whereas the meth head, the heroin addict, they're going to break into your house and rape your cat and microwave your kids and just do all kinds of damage. So I always thought, well, let's legalize pot. We'll tax the shit out of it and regulate it like we do alcohol, because I just don't think it's that big a deal. And the difference to me is the fact that pot has always struck me as something that has had the consequences of pot use aren't that severe. I would say comparable to cigarettes or alcohol use. Whereas heroin, meth, and other things have much greater, more drastic, damaging consequences on a much shorter timeline. Then I heard this, and this is kind of anecdotal. I couldn't tell you where I heard it, but I heard that in Amsterdam now, where that's like the legal drug capital of the world, all bets are off and anything goes in that city. I gotta visit it someday. But in Amsterdam, they have even heroin addicts can manage their addiction. They go to the doctor twice a day or whatever, and they get nice, clean, pure heroin administered by a doctor. These guys can hold down jobs and function in society and still be addicted to heroin. And it makes me wonder if maybe, God, is like socialized medicine the way to go? It kind of rails against kind of my core beliefs, but you know, you always have to check your thinking. You always have to challenge yourself. So there you go. Maybe we should legalize all drugs. And before we finally put the Whitney Houston story to bed, I just want to, I guess, eulogize her in my own kind of twisted way. And to do so, I think I'm going to do a critique of the lyrics of one of her signature songs. I know you think "I Will Always Love You," but no, that's Dolly Parton. That's not her. That's Dolly Parton, even though Whitney Houston made it the biggest hit in history or whatever. No. I'm thinking about "The Greatest Love of All." And I thought, let's not do Whitney. Let's do this version.
Flexible chocolate. They play so fine, don't you agree? I believe the children are our future. Thank you. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride. Make it easier. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, you can't take away my dignity. Because the greatest love of all is inside of me. Yeah. Sexy chocolate!
Oh, it still brings a tear to my eye. That, of course, Randy Watson and Sexual Chocolate from the movie Coming to America, starring Eddie Murphy. One of the funniest damn movies ever. Now, my critique is not really so much of that version or Whitney Houston's version. I'm more thinking about the lyrics. So here's what we've got. So it's more, I'm ripping the songwriter. I believe the children are our future. Well, yeah, they're not our past. They're not our present. They will generally outlive us. So yeah, they're our future. Way to state the obvious. Treat them well. Okay, fine. Yeah, I agree. And let them lead the way. Wait, what? Let them lead the way? They're children. They're going to lead you to the ice cream shop. They're going to lead you to Legoland. What are you going to ask directions from your child? So, how do you get to school, Timmy? I don't know. Or life advice? Have them lead you on life advice? Hey, Dougie. Put the crayons down. Dougie. Would you please put the crayons down and tell me what I'm supposed to do with my investment portfolio? Stupid lyrics. Just plain dumb. And we let that stuff sink into our heads and it kind of affects us. It really does. But it's supposed to be funny, so I'm not going to go on too much of a diatribe. Godspeed, Whitney Houston. To all those who loved her, I'm sorry for your loss. We continue.
Want to have Jim's babies?
Well, I'll give this little cookie an hour before we're doing the no pants dance.
Send him an email at jim@minorleagueradio.com.
All right, we got to talk Grammys here at the Minor League Radio Podcast. And basically, my ultimate point is that rock and roll has become institutionalized and they are nothing but a bunch of corporate idiots, just like when anything becomes institutionalized. The Grammys are as predictable as the sun rising in the east, much like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, I don't care about 99% of the Grammys, and I posted on Facebook that I just didn't give a fuck about the Grammys. But God, I do. I hate myself that I do, but I do. But only about the hard rock category, because that's my bread and butter. That's the core of my being. Hard rock, heavy metal, dude. So this year's hard rock, and before I get into that, I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has been stupid on this topic since they inaugurated the hard rock category. The very first year, Metallica released And Justice for All, a seminal album, a brilliant album, but no, Jethro Tull wins the Grammy. And I actually have grown to like Jethro Tull, but I wouldn't, hard rock, heavy metal, I don't know. And it certainly pissed me off back in the day, and they haven't improved. This year's Hard Rock nominees, The Foo Fighters, Dream Theater, Mastodon, Sum 41, and Megadeth. Foo Fighters won. There's a shock. Now, The Foo Fighters are a great band. I love The Foo Fighters. They are, I thank God every day. Well, no, I don't exactly, but yes, I do. I thank God every day that Kurt Cobain killed himself, that whiny little bitch. It's like, oh my God, I'm so famous and rich, I can't handle it, so I'm going to do heroin because my stomach hurts because I can't handle the fame, and I still can't handle it, so I'm just going to blow my brains out with a shotgun, even though I've got a wife and kid that love me, and I'm creating my art, but it's just too much to handle. Ugh. The only thing is that I wish Kurt Cobain would have waited like 10 years before he decided to off himself, because then Nirvana would not have been frozen in time as like the greatest rock band in history. It's like fooling with your little pixie dynamics. Some other time I'll go off on Nirvana. Suffice it to say that at least Nirvana broke up and gave us Dave Grohl, the real talent in that band. Let's listen to his acceptance speech.
To me, this award means a lot because it shows that the human element of making music is what's most important. Singing into a microphone and learning to play an instrument and learning to do your craft, that's the most important thing for people to do. It's not about being perfect. It's not about sounding absolutely correct. It's not about what goes on in a computer. It's about what goes on in here, and it's about what goes on in here.
Now, I agree with most everything he said, but God, that came off as just so pretentious. It's like, oh my God, I'm so pure. I'm so organic with my music. It all just comes from the heart and the head. Aren't I great? I'm not going to rip on Dave Grohl too much, though, because, like I said, I think the Foo Fighters are kind of the last truly great American rock band. They've just put out awesome stuff for almost 20 years now, I think, or maybe even more. So it's cool. I don't begrudge the Foo Fighters, but come on. Giving the Foo Fighters a Grammy is, like, redundant. Their mantles are going to fall over from the weight of their previous Grammys. Especially since one of the all-time great bands, Dream Theater, got nominated finally. They redefined a genre, progressive metal, back in 1992, I believe, with Images and Words, one of the landmark albums in progressive metal history. Absolutely brilliant. They are among the greatest players of their respective instruments. Yet they always, they never lost sight of the song in the midst of all the talent and all the playing that they did. And damn it, they deserve to be recognized. But instead, the Foo Fighters win. And they prove themselves to be corporate idiots. And, you know, Nicki Minaj gets to do 8 minutes of, like, Catholic seance exorcism crap, but Dream Theater can't play because their songs are too long. You know, it's just like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, Rush has not been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It is a fucking travesty. Rock and roll is institutionalized, completely peopled by corporate idiots. Okay, rant off.
The Minor League Radio Podcast, currently trending on Twitter.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
Hashtag awful.
All right, let's get off the music bandwagon here for a little bit and turn to the box office results from this past weekend. Tops of the box office, Safe House. It's a spy thriller with Denzel Washington. Oh, enough said. And Ryan Reynolds, he stars in it too. Man, I'd like to be the meat in that sandwich. No, I wouldn't. I would not. I'm totally straight. Denzel. No. Totally straight. Ryan Reynolds. Totally straight. Right here, this guy. Likes big boobs, likes great asses on chicks. Totally straight. Yeah, anyway, number two is The Vow. Yeah, well, it's close to Valentine's Day, so I guess I'll just swallow my vomit this time. Number three, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. The original Ghost Rider apparently was so good it needed a sequel. I don't know. You gotta love Nick Cage, though. The guy's got Academy Awards, but he'll do anything. Okay, it's like, I could call him right now. Hey, Nick, I'm doing a YouTube video on masturbation. $10. You in? Yeah? Great. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Nick Cage. Gotta love him. Number four on the box office results from last weekend, Journey to the Mysterious Island. And this confuses me because they used the number two instead of the word two. So is it like a sequel? Like, why do you put a number in the title? I don't remember Journey 1, The Mysterious Island. I don't get it. Number 5, This Means War. Spies fighting over a girl. Now, maybe one of them was Liam Neeson kicking ass. Speaking of Liam Neeson kicking ass, worthy of note, Star Wars 3D, The Phantom Menace, number 6. All right, look. I'm one of the biggest Star Wars geeks on the planet. I've seen the original, A New Hope, like over 100 times. I watch them every time they're on. You know, Spike TV has the new trilogy on like every other weekend. I always watch. But it's just starting to annoy me because at some point, and it was right around the time of Return of the Jedi, George Lucas decided that he wanted to sell lunchboxes more than he wanted to make movies, which is why we have those fucking Ewoks and that fucking Jar Jar Binks. And it's destroying something that is near and dear to my heart. I mean, the last trilogies, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, largely just abortions of movies. They're just horrible. But there is something to recommend each of them, and that one thing makes it worth seeing. For one thing, lightsabers. What are you going to do? You got lightsabers, I'll watch. But in the first movie, The Phantom Menace, you had Darth Maul. One of the best villains ever. Rivals Darth Vader. If I had been writing those movies, I would have kept Darth Maul as a principal villain until either the late second movie or the third movie. He was awesome. And really, other than Liam Neeson kicking ass, the only reason to watch The Phantom Menace, because otherwise it was just dumb. Attack of the Clones, much the same thing. Not a lot to recommend that movie, except seeing Yoda fight with lightsabers for the first time. That was cool. And again, it makes the whole movie at least watchable, at least in my view. You get to Revenge of the Sith, and I think that's actually a decent movie worthy of the Star Wars canon. I put it above Return of the Jedi, you know, because there aren't any fucking Ewoks in Revenge of the Sith. But, Mr. Lucas, can you please stop fucking with things? You've already made all the money. All the money is yours. It's all yours. You don't need to keep retooling and revamping unless you're just going to rewrite the whole story and reshoot it. That I might watch, but I'm not going to go watch Star Wars 3D.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
The Minor League Radio Podcast is an equal opportunity annoyer.
All right, let's close out this edition of the podcast with some goofy shit. And also kind of a commentary on the healthcare system in this country. Melissa Torres was a passenger in an April 2011 auto accident in Texas City, Texas, in which the five people involved were reported, quote, uninjured by police. And indeed, Torres was released from the Mainland Medical Center emergency room after a routine evaluation, for which she was billed $4,850. In fact, records from April 2011 until September showed her balance as $4,850. However, in September, Mainland learned that Torres had made an insurance claim against the driver and settled it for $30,000. The hospital quickly updated her balance to $20,211 and filed a claim against that settlement. That's from the Daily News of Galveston. Hospitals, of course, are obligated to render emergency care to anyone who needs it, even to undocumented immigrants and irrespective of ability to pay. However, various state laws, such as New York's, also prohibit hospitals from releasing a patient who has no safe place to be discharged to. A January New York Times report noted that New York City hospitals currently house about 300 of those, quote, continuing care patients, with many in the five-year-long range and one patient now in his 13th year living at the hospital. In some states, even, the law's wording permits pop drops, in which adult children leave, quote, ailing parents at a hospital when the children decide they need a break. I still hesitate to say that socialized medicine is the answer to our problems, but we definitely have a problem. Alrighty, as we listen to the awesomeness that is Archimatheos Stained Glass Sky, we will leave it there for this edition of the Minor League Radio Podcast. You can listen and leave comments on the website, that is minorleagueradio.com. You can fire an off an email to me, that is jim@minorleagueradio.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes if you're so inclined. If you like the podcast, tell a friend, and if you hate the podcast, tell an enemy. As always, thank you for listening, and until next time, tschüss.